Campus FM presents 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri. Welcome to this anniversary series, remembering 100 years of women on campus. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I shall be looking at this theme from many different angles, the sociological, the statistical, the anthropological, and the historical. I shall be asking questions about life for female students and academics on and off campus, yesterday and today, and possibly also tomorrow. I'm very pleased to have with me today four representatives of the KSU or the SRC as it was in the past, and we shall be talking about females on those student councils of university. The people who are here today are Rosette Fenech, Louiselle Bassallo, Rebecca Mikalev, and William Farrugia, who later on will introduce themselves. Included in the program will be Anna Maria Darmanin, who was president and on the committee between 1991 and 1995, on the phone from abroad. People who are here today are females, and obviously there's also William, but females who are representative of the females who have been presidents or secretary generals of the KSU. I was unable to invite everybody because the studio is what it is, and we're already quite a crowd, but I salute also Claire Cassar and Roberta Avellino, who are presidents of the KSU as well. Welcome to you all. And it's really all today, a larger number than I usually have. Normally, I create a structure and questions for my guests, but in this case, I don't think it's really necessary, because my basic questions are going to be about what made you feel that you wanted to join the SRC in Rosette's case and KSU for the others. Also, what do you feel was the situation regarding women on campus at the time that you were there, and perhaps how things have changed, if they have. How do you feel that female participation contributed to the campus and to the KSU environment? It sounds quite like a serious discussion, but I'm sure there will be some anecdotes to animate the program. The first female member of the SRC was Secretary General between 58 and 59. Another female member held office between 62 and 63. Another lady was a member in those same years. Then came Geraldine Parch. And in the years 70-71 and 71-72, Rosette Fenech became Secretary General. So I'm going to put the first question to Rosette. It was unusual at that time to have females on the, at the time, SRC, Student Representative Council. And you volunteered, you put your hand up and said, you know, vote for me. Why?
That wasn't exactly the case, but in our time we had junior college, and straight out of school, in the first weeks, I would say, of junior college, we were being recruited to participate in the now historically famous housing campaign led by now Professor Henri Frendo and Luis Gallia. I started with that. I found it was a good cause and fun at the same time. I integrated very easily. And from there, straight from there, I went into an SDS, which possessed me, I would say, for most of my life. So when I reached university, that's 2 years after, I was already very well acquainted with the student leaders at the time. All men, no problem. They encouraged me to stand. I did so, came out tops. They nominated me Secretary General. That is how it started. Possibly they thought that that would have made me keep my mouth shut by just taking the minutes, but it was certainly not the case.
Well, they obviously didn't know you very well, was it?
they thought that. It certainly helped to deter the use of bad language, but
interesting point.
I must say I was always very active. In fact, in the last year of my finals in 73, it was very difficult to keep out of mischief. And you may ask, did it make any difference? It certainly didn't make any difference to me. I never felt uncomfortable in a room full of men. did they want to listen to me? I made them listen to me. It didn't make any difference to me. Whether it made any difference to them, I don't know. However, I think that after that, the participation of women became more and more regular. We have to take into consideration the fact that at that time we were just over 800 and women were in minority. So it is not surprising that there was only one woman at the time. But ever since, I think there has always been an increased number of women. At a certain stage, I think there was an almost all women, if not all women council. And yes, why not? A question I would like to ask you is why doesn't anybody ask men what difference they have made? Because why should we always be made to feel different? We are different, yes, but I don't think that difference should inhibit us in any way to participate, to make our voices heard. And here we are today with a university that has almost more women than men.
Definitely got more women than men since 1991.
But not in all faculties, unfortunately.
Not, no.
And this is where I think that women should be encouraged to participate where they are in a minority. Because sometimes I regret to say, and I say this with a little bit of sadness, that we prefer to be wet blankets and not, you know, come forward. Pluck up courage, and yes, why not? If we're good at it, let's show that we're good at it, because we can be just as good. But sometimes it's the women's fault. It's
That's a point I would like to follow up on. But just let me turn to Louiselle. You were on the council for about 4 years, so you fulfilled various posts, cultural entertainment.
Officially, I was first a member, then vice president, mm-hmm. then president, and then I went back to being a member for my final year, because it was like being a politician, at least in my time. I mean, I wouldn't have mobiles at the time. My phone would never stop ringing.
I can imagine.
So, yeah. But I used to take care of a lot of cultural activities as well, like student festival. Mm. We made that big again. Many events, Leila Maltia, obviously. Because participation on campus has always been a bit weak. I think even now, every generation complains about the apathy. So sometimes you have to entice people to participate through the fun things, you know. Although in my time we did have a protest, which I was very petrified of, because the student body hadn't protested in many, many years. We're talking about 93, I think. And we had protested about the work phase, because it had been shortened without, nobody had consulted us, and they just went ahead. And I remember thinking, oh my God, nobody's going to turn up. And and I can never forget, because I saw the beginning of the crowd and I thought, not bad, not bad. Then someone told me, no, there's like thousands of people already in Mseda walking, you know, so it was great. It was quite good to see students participate like that. And the year after, we had one about the environment where the junior college students had joined. So at least like that, we had a bit of activity.
Do you think that some of the activities that you spearheaded were activities that would have been spearheaded had the president been a male?
Yes, I think in my time, certain activities, yes, others, no. Obviously, in my time, there were more women. There was Claudette Patch. We're still very good friends today. Anna Maria, who
unfortunately, Claudette couldn't be with us today.
There was Sumi Dolo, Natasha Muscat, and Tania Camilleri. These are the ones I'm remembering off the top of my head. I think Marie Briguglio. So we were a very vociferous bunch. I was quite surprised to learn at the time, because, you know, you get into it, you're with your friends, and suddenly you're vice president, but it just happens naturally. It's not a matter, at the time, it wasn't a matter of being a woman or a man. Luckily, I mean, you know, because I can appreciate that. However, we were quite a strong voice, and a loud one too. But we had a good relationship with everyone else, so of course, there was more awareness, because we were all pretty much feminists, you know, and wanted to get our voice heard and also address certain discriminations. Because sometimes, and it still happens today, I mean, there's still a long way to go, especially when it comes to language. Because people don't realize they're being sexist the way they speak, you know, and you have to call them out. I've seen this at work when I used to work in broadcasting, which is heavily male-dominated. On campus, it's not so bad, because there's more awareness, of course. But people don't realize they're discriminating against you just by the way they talk. You know, and a funny anecdote I had, which I referred to before the program, I mean, I didn't tell you what it was. So I was at the office, I was president of KSU at the time, and someone called And this man asked me, he told me, who is the president of KSU? Because I need to send a letter. And I said, Luisel Vassallo. I didn't tell him I was talking, but I told him Luisel Vassallo. And a few days later, we received a letter at KSU to Mr. Luis L. Full stop, Vassallo. So this Classic. Guy assumed, this happened to me even in my working life. I used to have people calling saying, may I speak to the manager? And I'd say, it's the manager. And they go, Ma, is there anyone above you? Like, they'd actually tell me that, you know. But this was my first experience. And I kept looking at this letter. I'm saying, we don't have a Lewis in KSU. We don't. Until it hit me that this letter was for me, you know, and this person who called assumed I was a man, you know. Yeah. But I was referring to earlier, I was quite surprised to find out that I was the first female president. Before me, there was one, but she lasted, I think, 2 months, because then, I think her name was Angela, but I've never met this person, because many, many, many years before me, and she went away on an exchange while she was president, so she only lasted a couple of months, as far as I know. But I that's all I know. And so I was quite surprised, say, how can it be? You know, I'm the first. You know. And in my time, when I was president, the Secretary General was a woman, the vice president was a woman, and the international secretary was a woman. So we were quite loud, very vociferous team, all very different. I mean, we had our disagreements as well, but we worked very well together, and we're still very good friends to this very day. Of course,
and you don't use bad language in meetings. You wouldn't have done that.
Of course we did. Especially when we're angry.
Okay, because Rosette was very happy about controlling their time.
That was long before
it became the norm to use.
We try to keep all decorum.
Perhaps at this point we can bring in Anna Maria Darmanin, who kindly made her valuable comments to me over the phone earlier.
Being at KSU is one of the experiences I cherish most in my life, looking back at my university days. The first thing that comes to my mind is always KSU. I think it was my biggest learning lesson. At the time, I didn't think about being the second female president. You know, the gender didn't make a difference to me. It wasn't something which was in my mind often. It was more when I went into the working world that I realized the difference, and I appreciated more the fact that when I was at university, I was the second female president. In hindsight, I think that it did have an impact on what we discussed and what we did. And one of the most memorable things for me during my presidency in KSU was the students' protest we had done because Imnidra Temple was vandalized, and we were some 2,000 students that took to the streets and walked to Parliament and protested on the penalties at the time on such vandalism. And I think being a female made a difference on how we looked at it. I mean, for me, culture and our heritage have always been very, very much to my heart. And I think we gave it a little bit more of, I would say, we put more passion into this protest we did. At the time, it was the first ever protest that students did, which was not related to money, but related more to something which had nothing to do with our studies, but more with our country. And I think that did make a difference, me being a woman. And as I said earlier, you know, I cherish my days at KSU because I think they were my biggest training ground for the working world, those days in KSU. Being in meetings with the administration of university, being in meetings with industry, and being a student meant that you were allowed to do mistakes. It was okay, you know, people closed an eye because you're a student, but it was a great training ground for me. So my university days, my education, I would say, is not just my degree. My education at university was my degree and KSU.
Let me now turn to Becky. I know Becky quite well because, obviously, I've worked for many years at the university. I mean, Luisel and I graduated together, I think. And Becky was a very active president, and I used to sort of meet up with you at events and, you know, help in the organization if I could and that kind of thing. So yes, that's quite bad. What about you? By the time you came on board, it was 2014,
yes,
and perhaps things had changed in the awareness and acceptance world, or no?
I'm sure it was better than maybe 70s or 80s perhaps, but I still felt like there was much to be done in terms of the respect you would gain as a woman. So I started my journey at university. I was involved in a couple of other organizations. I was involved in the Law Students Association, ELSA, and I was involved in ESN, so I was always very active on campus. And I remember I decided I wanted to give it a shot with KSU, and in fact I started with social policy because there were issues which were very close to my heart as well. And I got elected, and I was in my first year in KSU working on a lot of the issues that were at heart to me. So, for example, at the time there was the decriminalization of drugs and the gender identity bill, so I was kind of like spearheading that. And then when it came to my second year and I contested as KSU president, I remember there hadn't been a president for about 6 or 7 years. So Roberto Avellino was about 6 years, the president 6 years before I had my election. So it had been a while, and I remember on campus people were coming up to me and they were like, I really want to vote for you because we really need a woman as a president that would give us, you know, they were really encouraging. And I was like, that's really good that people would tell me that. But at the same time, I felt like, I hope people aren't just voting for me because I'm a woman. I mean, I felt like then when I got elected, I mean, I needed really to push myself even harder, you know. And I felt the same way with the board. I mean, we were a board of 13, and I think we're just 4 women and the rest were men. And I felt like I needed to prove myself even to my colleagues. So in the beginning, there was a bit of that struggle, you know, that I mean, then I feel like I gained my colleagues' respect, but I felt like I needed to kind of earn it more than maybe a man would have. Not sure if that making sense, but that's the way I felt at the time. And a couple of anecdotes I have as well, if I want to share. I remember one time I was meeting a politician. He was coming on campus on one of the events, and he was referring to me, Allora, Presidenta, kif sejra? I'm like, Presidenta, it's not even, like, is it a word, Presidenta? And would you really go on to a man and tell him, Allora, President, how is it going? You know, I felt like it was a bit mocking, and that had really, really annoyed me. And there was another time, I remember as well, I had a bit of an argument with actually the motor public transport. We had a big problem in my time with buses. I think there was a bit of a change going on, and I remember gotten feedback from students, and the feedback was obviously very bad. And I was like, you know what, today I'm getting the bus, and I'm going to see if this is all true, because I usually use my car, and I was like, I need to check it out. And I remember I spent about 40 minutes waiting for a bus to Valletta from university, and I was like, this is unacceptable. And I called the guy. I was like, listen, I've sent you all these emails. These people are saying the truth, blah, blah, blah. And I was really, really angry on the phone. And then the next time we had the meeting, I remember he was like, Ma konċna hasbek ekta, konna hasbek naisha kwita mara. I'm like, is this guy serious? Like, he was referring to me. He thought, you know, I was this little petite flower. I'm like, you really don't know me at all if you think that. So, yes, I mean, this is 2015, 2016. I was president, so it's not very long time ago, but I still felt like I needed to earn respect. Exactly. Exactly. Even now. So
what about participation by other women? Obviously, you had your own motivations for joining, but what about getting other women to participate and have that kind of commitment to join the KSU in other roles?
In my year, I remember the first year, which was a bit disappointing, in 14-15, all the admin roles were taken up by men, and they had their little tiny bubble, and they used to discuss, they had like their own admin group, and we really felt a bit like excluded. It was like the 5 men taking all the executive decisions. And I said in my year, I want to change that. But we were still a minority women in my year, in 15-16. I think we were 4 women in total out of 13. But we involved a lot of women, as in other women from other organizations, who obviously KSU's policies always involve as many organizations as possible. And I remember in my year, we celebrated Women's Day, and we took a photo. I remember we were about 10 female presidents taking a photo together. And this is out of, I think right now there are about 40 organizations. So it was, I mean, 10 isn't even half, but we're like, you know what, maybe we're getting there. There's like this momentum maybe of women wanting to take on these leadership roles, which we really need, because I feel like even though there's a higher number of university students which who are female, I feel like they're getting lost in the working world. I feel like what's happening, why are there more women graduates? But then it seems like the numbers don't match the working world or the decision making world.
Lots to be done. When it comes to decision making, there are a lot of women are in the. I mean, women work obviously. I mean, we have to. That's why we study.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, it's still a struggle. The glass ceiling, the pay gap, and it's still a reality. In fact, hearing you talk, I'm thinking my KSU years were quite good when it comes to gender equality, and I never felt really discriminated against within KSU, you know. Mm. Obviously, externally, yes, and I got that when I went to work, and I still get it, you know. And I've experienced even discrimination in terms of the pay gap. People who succeeded me would get triple my salary for less responsibility, that kind of horrific story, you know. Mm. But there's still a lot to be done, and it takes, because it's changing a cultural mentality. It's behavior, it's nurture, it's a lot. But of course, things have happened and there are more women obviously participating. But it's still, the problem is when they come to reach the decision-making roles, because life still gets in the way more for women than for men, you know.
I'd like to ask Rosette about this issue of why we are talking about this idea that women don't follow on with their studies, go into the work world. I mean, you yourself have had a career in one sector, and now you've done the law course, and you're going to graduate now. So you're looking to change your ITER.
First of all, as Rosette said, it's a matter of culture. Let's start at the basics. At that time, it was accepted. It was also legally accepted. Remember that we were recently at the Honoris Causa, and Rini Laivira mentioned this. There was a time when government contracts, and then they were followed up by the private sector, clearly stated female employees may be requested to relinquish their post upon marriage. I mean, for heaven's sake, that was one reason why even my first job, I refused to sign a contract. If that is not discrimination, but this was the law. This was, I mean, accepted, and this was a government contract. Then it became illegal. So it's a culture which is changing. Then the EU, no, you cannot do it. If you do it, you are literally breaching the law. But society, the law changes with society. But the pace is different. The pace is different.
Unfortunately, time is running out, and I really would like to give a voice to the one male around this table, William Farrugia, who is the president of the KSU, and ask you about the situation now within the KSU, where do you feel that the female participation is enough? If it isn't, why not?
I think that the female members of KSU are among the most vociferous, so I can't complain there. So they're very active and they participate in everything which we're organizing, even if it's not one of our main events or even if it's something policy-related and they're not involved directly. They're very active in everything which we organize. We're quite a balanced council, so we're seven men and six women. However, I think in the past there were a few councils which were quite unevenly balanced in both ways. So I think in terms of the current situation on campus, I think it is getting more of an accepted norm that you can have both extremes or maybe a middle ground. So I don't believe that at the moment there is any issue with women being elected or women being even proposed. However, I think, and this is true even with organizations and presidents, it's becoming more evenly balanced. However, I think there are a number of women who are very heavily involved, and then the others aren't interested. So I think that's where the balance comes off, with the people who are you're surrounded with. So I think even with smaller organizations, there are more men because women don't feel that they want to involve themselves on campus. Maybe it's because they don't feel like they're heard. And I have seen instances of people in my team have been thrown to a side because they're women. And I'm aware that there were instances and incidents in the past, even within uni administration, where such instances occurred because people were women. And this doesn't send the right message. I recall a very recent incident. There was someone who needed something from KSU and has to see the president or the secretary general because we're both men. And the only person in the office was the vice president, who's Celine. So she's a woman. And he said, no, I want to speak to the president and or the secretary general. I was like, but why? When I heard this recall. And I spoke to the person, and I don't believe in, like, saying you shouldn't have singled her out because she's a woman. I mean, it was pretty evident that was the reasoning. So I told him, no, I think it's best to speak to Celine on this. So I was telling him for that he has to speak. I didn't give him the option of speaking to me or to the secretary general. I think that's the way we need to reinforce people. If you're not willing to do it on your own, like you force people to change their ways. So it can't be, no, you did wrong because you want to speak to a man or to a woman. Because people just say, ah, yes, that's what I did, and I won't change my ways. But if you don't give them an option, then that's the way they'll have to act. And I try to involve everyone equally. So, I mean, since the vice president, I think she deserves to be involved as a vice president. So I won't, like, defer to anyone else just because she's a woman. So I think that's the way things have to be run. So I can't say that anyone's contribution is less than anyone else's. So at the moment, I'm very happy with my team, and I think, like, women are as capable as men, so it shouldn't be an issue at all on campus. Then when it comes to the working world, I do believe that there's an issue. So there are a larger number of graduates who are women, but then the working environment doesn't show that at all. So you have offices which are very male-dominated. I've worked in places which were 90% male-dominated, so it's not a very healthy environment and doesn't reflect the reality. Unfortunately,
the thing is, there isn't one solution. In the sense, one issue is visibility, for example. So when you say that women might not feel that their voices heard and they don't participate as much, if I don't see, excuse me, as a role model, I don't see other role models who are women who are doing things that I say I can't do that. You know, so visibility is important in different roles, because if you look at the newspapers or you look at TV, when there are certain events, I mean, all you see, no offense, William, is men in suits. You know, and it does put women off, because they'll feel like they are, oh my God, I'm going to an environment where it's like all, you know.
You're not
going to
feel comfortable.
No, I don't feel uncomfortable in the presence of men, of course, at all. I mean, I have three brothers, and that's how I was brought up. But, you know, role models, if I don't see someone doing what I aspire to do as a woman, I might think that, you know, subliminally, that maybe
it's not for me,
you know. And so, I'm doing it in journalism now, and women, there are many women journalists, but they don't carry themselves through, or the system doesn't help them to become editors and chief newsroom editors or whatever.
This is the way it was way back, and it hasn't changed because I did mention to you that, I mean, I was discouraged, not prohibited, but discouraged from taking the law course in my original days, because it was all men. What are you going to do with all those men, you know, sort of? But that has changed.
Anyway, I'm really sorry to say that we've come to the end of our time. I know that we could have had an hour's program. I'd like to thank Rosette Fenech, Luis Elbasallo, Rebecca Mikalev, and William Farrugia for coming here today to talk about the female participation in the SRC and also, obviously, the KSU. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to 100 Years of Women on Campus. If you would like to hear the programs again, just go to www.maltauniversitybroadcasting.com and click on webcasts. Join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
You have just listened to 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri.